Graphic Audio. A movie in your mind. Graphic Audio presents William W. Johnstone Sidewinders Number 6, Texas Bloodshed. Narrated by Ken Jackson. With performances by Tim Carlin, Mort Shelby, Stephen Carpenter, Yasmin Twazon, Johan Detweiler, David Coyne, Terrence Aselford, Scott McCormick, Eric Messner, Thomas Penny, Patrick Bussink, Joe Brack, Christopher Grayville, Evan Casey, and Christopher Sheeran. Sidewinders Number 6, Texas Bloodshed.
Scratch Morton peered up at the gallows.
You know, I'd just as soon go somewhere else, Bo. This place surely does give me the fantods.
You don't have anything to worry about if you haven't done anything to give Judge Parker cause to order you hanged.
I don't know. They don't call that fellow the hanging judge for no reason. He can come up with a cause if he wants to.
Come on. We don't have any business with the judge hanging or otherwise.
The gallows they'd been looking at was no ordinary affair. It stood off to one side of the big red brick federal courthouse in Fort Smith, Arkansas, and had 8 trapdoors built into it. When huge crowds gathered at the broad courthouse lawn to watch convicted criminals put to death, it was quite a spectacle at times. It wasn't that unusual to see 8 men kicking out their lives at once at the end of those hang ropes. As Scratch had said, Judge Isaac Parker wasn't known as the hanging judge for no reason. The Texans continued strolling past the courthouse. It was a crisp, cold, late winter day, and large white clouds floated in the deep blue sky above Fort Smith. Off to their right, bluffs dropped steeply to the Arkansas River where it curved past the city, forming the border between Arkansas and Indian Territory. Bo and Scratch had been to Fort Smith before. They had been almost everywhere west of the Mississippi in their decades of wandering, but it had been a while, and after stabling their horses, they had decided to stroll around town and have a look at the place to see how much it had changed. They probably should have started somewhere besides the courthouse and its adjacent gallows, Bo mused. His old friend Scratch was generally a law-abiding sort, as was Bo himself, but they had wound up on the wrong side of iron bars a few times in their adventurous lives, albeit briefly and usually because of some sort of mistake. Both men were about the same height. Age had turned Scratch's hair pure silver and put streaks of gray in Bo's dark brown hair, but the years hadn't bent their rugged bodies. Bo was dressed in a sober black suit and hat that made him look a little like a hellfire and brimstone preacher, while Scratch was the dandy of the pair in high-topped boots, whipcord trousers, a fringed buckskin jacket over a white shirt, and a cream-colored Stetson with a fancy band. Scratch's fondness for the flashy extended to his guns, a pair of long-barreled, ivory-handled Remington revolvers that rode comfortably in cut-down holsters. Bo, on the other hand, as befitted the conservative nature of the rest of his attire, carried a single Colt 45 with plain walnut grips. The similarity between them was that both Texans were fast on the draw and deadly accurate with their shots when they had to be, although they preferred to avoid trouble if that was at all possible. Trouble usually had other ideas where they were concerned, though. In fact, one ruckus or another had been dogging their heels ever since they had met as boys in Texas during the infamous runaway scrape when the Mexican dictator Santa Anna and his army chased the rebellious Texicans almost clear to Louisiana. However, General Sam Houston had known what he was doing all along, and when the time finally came to make a stand, the Texicans lit into Santa Anna's men in the grassy bayou-bordered fields near San Jacinto and won independence for their land and people. Despite their youth at the time, Bo and Scratch had been smack dab in the middle of that epic battle, and each had saved the other's life that day. That was the first time, but hardly the last. They probably would have been fast friends for life anyway, even if they had settled down to lives as farmers and ranchers as they had intended. But fate, in the form of a fever, had come along and taken Bo's wife and children from him after several years of that peaceful existence, and rather than stay where those bitter memories would have haunted him, he rode away and set out on the drift. He hadn't gone alone. Scratch had ridden with him, and the two of them had seldom been apart for very long since. They had wandered all over the frontier, taking jobs as ranch hands or shotgun guards or scouts when they needed to. Bo was a more than fair hand with a deck of cards and kept money in their pockets most of the time just by sitting in on a poker game now and then. His preacher-like appearance didn't hurt. Because of it, folks tended to underestimate his poker-playing ability. They passed some steps leading down to the courthouse basement.
Hell on the border. I've heard about that jail Parker's got down there in the basement. Sounds like a doggone dungeon if you ask me.
I'd just soon not find out firsthand.
A wagon with an enclosed back was approaching along the drive that ran in front of the courthouse. One man perched on the high driver's seat, handling the reins hitched to the four-horse team. He wasn't all that big, but he had broad shoulders, a prominent nose, and a drooping black mustache. He looked plenty tough and was well armed with two pistols worn butt forward and an old Henry rifle laying on the wagon seat next to him. Pinned to the man's coat was a Deputy U.S. Marshal's badge, Bo noted. He and Scratch walked on past the entrance to the jail as the wagon rolled up behind them. The deputy was probably either delivering or picking up some prisoners. Either way, it was none of his or Scratch's business. The deputy got down and went to open the wagon.
What tarnation?
Bo turned quickly too, his hand going to his gun as he did so. He saw the deputy marshal who'd been driving the wagon wrestling with a burly, unshaven man as they fought over possession of the deputy's rifle. Another man and a woman were dashing away across the courthouse lawn.
Those prisoners are escaping. Come on, Scratch!
Luckily, the direction in which the escaping prisoners had fled sent them on a course that Bo and Scratch could intersect at an angle. The woman was especially swift. She'd hiked up her long skirt, and her bare calves flashed in the winter sunlight as she sprinted for freedom. Long, curly blonde hair bounced on her shoulders and back as she ran. Scratch, who was a little faster on his feet than Bo, went after her, while Bo targeted the tall, skinny hombre with long black hair. Bo's pulse was pounding hard after only a few feet. He knew he couldn't hope to win a distance race with this long-legged gent, so he took a chance and launched himself off his feet in a diving tackle at the man's leg. Bo landed on the grass, but the fugitive hit the hard flagstone pavement. Bo rolled over, came up on a knee, and drew his gun. He leveled the Colt at the fugitive.
Don't move, mister. I'll blow one of your knees apart if you do, and you'll never walk right again.
I'll never walk again after they hang me anyway.
That made sense. He didn't have anything to lose. Bo's finger tightened on the trigger. Meanwhile, Scratch had given chase to the blonde. She must have heard him coming after her, because she glanced over her shoulder at him with wide blue eyes. Seeing him close in on her, she increased her speed. Scratch didn't have enough breath left to curse, or he would have. Instead, he just tried to run a little harder. The woman had almost reached the streets that ran through Fort Smith's business district. If she made it into that maze of hills and buildings and people, she would stand a good chance of getting away. Scratch knew that. If he drew one of his Remingtons and took a shot at her, he could probably bring her down, even on the run like this. But he had never liked the idea of shooting at a woman, even one who must have broken the law. Nor did he know what crimes this particular gal was charged with. Gunplay didn't seem called for. And he couldn't close the gap, so it was starting to look like she was going to escape. She likely would have, too, if a man leading a team of mules hadn't emerged from the mouth of an alley just as the woman rounded a corner and started along the street. She had to come to a sudden stop to avoid running into them. Scratch saw that and poured on the last of the speed he had in reserve. He reached out and grabbed the collar of the blonde's dress as she tried to dart around the mules and their startled owners. The garment tore, splitting down the back and exposing a considerable expanse of smooth, creamy skin. Scratch bunched his fingers in the fabric and didn't let go. He tried to haul the woman closer so he could get hold of her.
Help! This crazy old cook's trying to rape me!
They had gone around a corner and were out of sight of the courthouse now, and the folks who'd been walking along this street had no earthly idea what was going on. Naturally, they believed the woman's apparently terrified claim that she was the victim here. The man with the mules let go of the reins and came toward Scratch.
Let go of her, you varmint!
Somebody fetch the law!
Scratch pulled the woman closer to him with his left hand and drew his right hand Remington.
Now everybody back off, dead blasted!
From the corner of his eye, he saw the woman's hand come up. Sunlight flashed on something she was holding. He jerked his head back, and it was a good thing he did. Otherwise, the small straight razor she had flicked open would have cut his throat neatly from ear to ear. She twisted in his grip. The dress ripped even more. She slashed down at his arm with the razor, and he had to let go of her and yank his arm back to avoid being cut. She could have run again then, but rage made her come after Scratch instead. She swiped the razor back and forth at his face, forcing him to give ground. Scratch was more tempted now to shoot him, but if he did that, some of the bystanders might open fire on him. Somebody grabbed him from behind, wrapping strong arms around him.
I got him, ma'am! He won't hurt you now!
The same couldn't be said of the blonde. With her face twisted in lines of hate, she kept coming, obviously intent on carving Scratch's rugged face into bloody ribbons. Back on the courthouse lawn, Bo was about to fire at the prisoner he'd been battling, when somebody suddenly stepped past him and swung a leg in a well-aimed kick. Bo recognized the rugged-looking deputy marshal who had driven the wagon up to the courthouse. More law officers swarmed past him and grabbed the unconscious fugitive. The deputy swung his rifle toward Bo.
Put that gun down, mister! Better yet, holster it. You're making me nervous.
Obviously, the deputy had overcome the man he'd been fighting with at the wagon, maybe with help from other deputies who'd come running out of the courthouse.
See which way the yellow-haired gal went?
She was headed that way. My partner was after her.
Well, come on then. She's the most loco one in the whole bunch.
Bo and the deputy ran toward Fort Smith's business district. Through gaps in the crowd, Bo caught a glimpse of Scratch being held from behind, his arms pinned by a burly townsman. The blonde that Scratch had pursued was coming at him, a razor in her uplifted hand. The deputy skidded to a halt. The shot made the woman hesitate, and Scratch took advantage of the opportunity to lift his left leg in a kick that caught her wrist and sent the razor flying from her fingers.
Oh!
Disarmed, the woman whirled around to flee again. The deputy snapped the rifle to his shoulder. The bullet smacked into the paving stones at the woman's feet.
Next one goes in your back, Kara. You know I ain't fooling.
She must have known he would kill her rather than let her get away, because she stopped and raised her hands. The torn dress hung open almost indecently, revealing her smooth back down to the curve of her hips.
Marshal, that woman needs something to wear.
Don't worry about that murderous whore.
More deputies who had come running from the courthouse closed in around the blonde. They jerked her arms behind her back and clapped handcuffs around her wrists. Only when she was securely manacled did one of the men take off his coat and drape it around her shoulders, where the mutilated dress was threatening to slip down and expose even more of her. The lawman who stood next to Bo and Scratch finally lowered his rifle and stepped aside to let the other deputies lead the prisoner past them.
Lock her up, boys, but don't put her in with Lo and Elam.
Brubaker!
Oh, hell, here comes Parker.
It was the famous hanging judge stalking along the street toward them, all right. Bo had seen photographs of Isaac Parker before, although he had never met the man and certainly never appeared before him in court. Parker didn't cut that impressive of a figure at first glance. He was a medium-sized man with dark hair and a Van Dyke beard, dressed in a brown tweed suit. You had to get close to him to see the unquenchable fire for justice that burned in his eyes. As judge for the Western District of Arkansas, which included Indian Territory, he rode herd on one of the wildest areas in the country. The tribes who had been settled on reservations in the territory several decades earlier were peaceful for the most part, but they had their share of criminals and troublemakers, just like any group will. For the most part, it was white owl hoots who made Indian Territory such a lawless, untamed region. Smugglers, bootleggers, rustlers, bank robbers, thieves, road agents, and murderers of all stripes viewed the territory as a refuge beyond the reach of the law. That wasn't strictly true. The various tribes had their own police forces, such as the Cherokee Light Horse, but those officers dealt only with Indian matters. Judge Parker employed a force of tough deputy marshals to patrol the territory and bring in lawbreakers, but they were spread pretty thin. Bo had heard it said that a lot of Parker's deputies were little better than outlaws themselves, and for all he knew, that might be true. The one called Brubaker certainly looked mean enough to have broken a few laws in his time.
I'm told the three prisoners in your custody have escaped, Brubaker. Is this true?
No, sir. It's a dablam lie. They gave me a mite of trouble, but they're all locked up now, Your Honor. Or they will be as soon as the boys get Kara LaChance behind bars.
You arrested the LaChance woman?
Yes, sir. Along with Dayton Lowe and Jim Elam. The rest of Gentry's bunch gave me the slip, but as soon as I provision up again, I'll be headed out on their trail.
Now, not so fast. I may have another job for you. Who are these men?
They, gave me a hand in corralling them prisoners.
Gave you a hand? Why, if we hadn't pitched in, two of them would have got away. And you darn well know it, mister.
Is that a Texas accent I hear?
Texas born, bred, and forever.
I'm Bo Creel, Your Honor. My part here is Scratch Morton.
I'm pleased to meet you, gentlemen. And you have my sincere thanks for your assistance in this matter. Those prisoners never should have gotten loose in the first place. How did they manage that, Brubaker? Why weren't they shackled in the back of that wagon?
Well, they were, Judge. I put the irons on them myself. There ain't no doubt about it. But when I swung open the door on the back of the wagon, Lo jumped me and tried to get my rifle away from me. While I was tussling with him, the other two jumped out and lit a shuck. They got loose somehow, but darned if I know how.
Did you search them before you locked them up? Some people are real good at picking locks if they got a little steel bar.
Are you trying to tell me how to do my job, mister? Of course I searched them. What kind of blasted fool you take me for?
Nevertheless, the prisoners were loose when you got here and unlocked the door.
Girl must have had something hidden somewhere on her. I ain't gonna speculate on where, because I searched her so blame good I was embarrassed about it for 50 miles. But if any of that bunch is tricky enough to pick some locks, it'd be Carol a chance.
I agree, but at least they're still in custody. We're fortunate about that. I repeat, we're obliged to you gentlemen for your help. I'd offer you a reward, but the federal government doesn't provide me with an abundance of cash to operate my court.
That's all right, Your Honor. We were glad to pitch in.
Yeah, even if that blonde hellion almost did cut me up with a razor.
A razor? I hadn't heard about that. So she had a razor hidden on her person too, eh?
I'll make the whore talk.
You've delivered the prisoners. Your job is done.
Brubaker looked like he wanted to argue, but he didn't say anything.
Good day, gentlemen.
I hope you don't plan on standing around waiting for me to thank you.
We didn't do it for thanks or reward. Just didn't want any outlaws getting loose to raise more hell.
We ain't over fond of outlaws.
Brubaker stomped after Parker.
Well, I reckon we can go get us a drink now. That's what I had in mind to start with. I remember a certain tavern on one of these hilly streets from the last time we passed through here.
I do too. Why don't we go see if we can find it?
They found the tavern without much trouble and were glad it was still in business. The place was a dim cave-like room in a stone building with very thick walls built into the side of a hill. Warm in the winter, cool in the summer, it was run by a burly red-headed Irishman named Michael Corrigan, who pointed a blunt finger at Bo and Scratch from behind the bar as they came in.
I remember the two of you. Start any trouble in this time, I'll bust your heads open with me trusty bung starter.
Hey, we didn't start the trouble last time, dadgummit.
And that was years ago. How do you even remember it?
Some things you don't forget, boyo. It took me nearly a week to clean up all the damage from that ruckus.
We're peaceable men. All we want are a couple of mugs of beer.
That I can do you for.
And maybe some coffee later on.
Aye, that too.
Corrigan drew the beers and slid the mugs across the hardwood. Bo paid for the drinks, and he and Scratch carried them to a table in one of the rear corners of the tavern.
Now this is more like it. Nobody trying to wallop us, stab us, or shoot us.
Better not get used to it.
Oh, I ain't gonna. It don't seem to matter how hard we try to steer clear of trouble. It finds us. I just hope that little fracas was our share of it for this trip. Did you get a look at that gal I was scuffling with?
I did. She was pretty good looking.
Yeah, too good looking to be an outlaw gal, if you ask me. But she sure went after me with that razor. I reckon that just goes to show you, you can't always tell what somebody's like by looking at them.
You should have figured that out a long time ago.
Oh, I did. I ain't no babe in the woods, as you well know. But when you see a gal like that, oh, shoot, you know what I mean.
After a while, Corrigan brought cups of coffee over to them.
I got some stew in the pot. Would you like some?
That sounds mighty fine, Mike. Thanks.
Corrigan nodded and started to turn back toward the bar. He paused as the door opened and a man came inside.
What's got your dander up, 42?
Deputy Marshal Brubaker ignored the question and strode up to the table.
I've been looking for you, too. Somebody told me they'd seen a couple Texans come in here. Let's go.
Go where?
We ain't under arrest, are we?
No, you ain't under arrest, but we're going to the courthouse. Judge wants to see you, and I mean right now.
What does Judge Parker want with us?
Well, maybe he's gonna give us a reward after all.
Don't hold your breath waiting for that.
He ain't come up with some excuse for hanging us, has he?
Just come on, will you?
Mike here was about to get us some bowls of Irish stew. I'm a little hungry. Hate to miss out on that.
Brubaker wheeled around and glared at the tavern keeper, who raised his hands in surrender.
Don't be giving me that evil eye, 42. I'll keep the pot warm for you, lads. You can have some of my fine stew later.
We'll hold you to that deal, Mac.
All right, Marshal, lead the way.
They walked up the hill toward the large level bluff where the courthouse was located.
What's that 42 business? Mike was calling you that like it's your name.
That's what some of my friends call me.
What, that how old you are? They're gonna start calling you 43 next year?
No, blasted, that's not how old I am. I'm 36.
Well, then how come folks don't call you 36?
They call me 42 because I like to play dominoes and 42's my favorite game.
Oh, well, why in tarnation didn't you say so? You know, Bo and me been playing 42 for years and years. Ain't that right, Bo?
Nothing I like better than a good game of 42. Maybe if we can find a fourth man, we can play sometime, Deputy.
Now, you don't reckon his honor'd be up for a game, do you?
I wouldn't bring it up if I was you. He's already in a pretty foul mood.
Because of those prisoners escaping?
They didn't escape. They're locked up right now. Lo and Elam are down in the basement, and that she-devil's in one of the women's cells.
Well, almost escaping then.
Do you two ever shut up? My God, every Texan I ever met just loved to flap his damn jaw.
Now, I might take that as an insult if I didn't know you liked to play 42. Shoot, you can't get mad at a fella who likes to play 42. Now, Moon is a different story. I never liked that game near as much.
When they reached the courthouse, the deputy escorted them, not to Parker's courtroom, but to an office adjacent to it. Parker was waiting there behind a big desk covered with papers.
Come in, gentlemen, come in. I'm afraid I can't offer you drinks or cigars. The decorum of the court, you know.
That's fine, Your Honor.
Parker waved them into a pair of chairs covered with Morocco leather that were placed in front of the desk.
Have a seat. I hope Marshal Brubaker didn't interrupt you in the middle of anything important.
Well, we were about to have some Irish stew at Corrigan's place.
Do you know anything about those prisoners you helped to apprehend while they were trying to escape?
We've heard their names spoken, but that's about all we know.
Well, that and the fact that blonde girl's a holy terror.
That's a good description of Kara LaChance. She's the inamorata of an outlaw named Hank Gentry.
What?
The judge means that Miss LaChance and this Gentry hombre are sweethearts.
Oh, well, she's right pretty, no doubt about that, but she didn't strike me as a cuddle of some sort. Leastways, not unless you'd like to cuddle up with a rattlesnake.
Hush up and let the judge talk.
Well, that's all right, Marshal. I want to make certain that Mr. Creel and Mr. Morton are clear about everything that's involved before I make my proposition to them.
You got a proposition for us, Your Honor?
Well, that's right. But first, you should know that the LaChance woman, along with the other two prisoners, Dayton Lowe and Jim Elam, are all members of what is without a doubt the most vicious outlaw gang operating in the territory at this moment. Marshal Brubaker was able to arrest the three of them, but there are at least a dozen more of the desperados still at large.
You went after 15 of the varmints by yourself?
I never figured on being able to capture all of them at once, but I thought if I was smart enough, I might be able to whittle them down a few at a time.
Marshal Brubaker is extremely intelligent and one of the toughest officers I know. His only flaw is an occasional tendency toward overconfidence.
Guilty as charged, Your Honor.
The point of what I just told you, gentlemen, is that not only are these three prisoners quite dangerous in their own right, they have friends still at large who represent a grave threat.
You said there are a dozen more in the gang, Judge?
That's right.
I don't think even that many men would dare to attack the courthouse right here in Fort Smith if you're worried about them trying to break those three out of jail.
I agree with you, Mr. Creel, but that's not what I'm worried about. You see, the state of Texas has a prior claim on the prisoners. Before the Gentry gang fled northward into the territory, they operated quite successfully south of the Red River, holding up numerous trains and banks in Texas and murdering a considerable number of innocent people.
I figured a federal court would trump a state court when it comes to such things, Your Honor.
It's actually a federal court that wants them, the one that covers the Eastern District of Texas. Gentry and his gang looted the mailbags and the express cars of those trains they held up, which makes their crimes fall under federal jurisdiction. Because those offenses were committed before their crimes in the territory and elsewhere were carried out, it's the federal court in Texas that has first claim on them. Judge Josiah Southwick.
Bigfoot Southwick's a federal judge now?
You're acquainted with Judge Southwick.
We knew him in our younger days. He was a lawyer then.
Part lawyer, part snake oil salesman. Mostly snake oil salesman.
Keep a civil tongue in your head. That's a federal judge you're talking about.
I'm sure I've been called worse than a snake oil salesman. At any rate, Judge Southwick has requested that any members of Gentry's gang who are captured be transferred to his jurisdiction for trial. And a short time ago, I received a telegram from the Justice Department directing me to comply with that request.
You got to send the prisoners to Texas.
To Tyler, to be precise. Judge Southwick's court is located there.
Well, that's a shame. You're probably looking forward to dropping them through the traps out yonder on that big gallows of yours.
I don't look forward to men being hanged, but I am dedicated to seeing justice carried out. In this case, that justice will have to be dispensed in another court. The matter was decided in Washington and is out of my hands. My responsibility is to see to it that the prisoners are safely transported to their destination. To that end, I have charged Marshal Brubaker with delivering them. Despite what happened earlier, I remain convinced that he's the best man for the job.
I expect you'll be sending a number of deputies with him. You have to be concerned that the rest of the gang will try to rescue those three.
That's exactly what I'm worried about. Unfortunately, you overestimate the manpower I have available to me at the moment, Mr. Creel. All my deputies are engaged on other chores.
What's that got to do with us, Your Honor?
I think you know very well what I'm getting at, Mr. Creel. I can't afford to hire more full-time deputies, but I do have a small amount of funds that can be used at any discretion. I want to hire you and Mr. Morton temporarily to help Marshal Brubaker take those prisoners to Tyler. What do you say? How would you two like to go home to Texas?
Been a while since we've been home. If we was to go to Tyler, it wouldn't be that hard to drift on down to Victoria.
Still quite a ways.
Yeah, but we'd be closer than we are now.
I want you to know I didn't ask the judge to hire you fellas. I figure I can deliver those prisoners to Judge Southwick without any help.
Now that's certainly a possibility. Especially if Gentry doesn't get wind that we're moving them until it's too late to go after them. But I don't think we can count on that, Jake. Gentry has a number of friends among the criminal element here in Fort Smith.
I'll go along with whatever you decide, Your Honor.
It's not my decision to make. That lies in the hands of these gentlemen.
How much money are we talking about, Judge?
$40 apiece, plus 10 cents per mile. One way, of course. Where you go after you reach Tyler with the prisoners is your own affair.
Well, that's as good as we can make cowboying.
Probably a little better once you throw in the mileage. How do you intend to pay us, Your Honor?
I'll give you the $40 when you're ready to ride out with Marshal Brubaker.
What, you afraid to give us the dinero ahead of time because we might take and run off to fritter it away on whiskey and wild women, huh?
A federal judge must be prudent.
What about the mileage?
Judge Southwick will pay you that portion of your fee when you deliver the prisoners to his court.
Does His Honor Judge Southwick know about that?
I'll send him a telegram advising him on our arrangement once we actually reached agreement on the particulars.
Wait, so he's liable to tell us to go climb a stump and suck eggs instead of giving us the money?
Oh, blast it! I'll guarantee the payment out of my own pocket if Judge Southwick refuses to abide by the terms I've laid out.
Well, I suppose that's fair. I'll say yes. How about you, Scratch?
I reckon I'll go along with the deal, too. Be mighty good to see some of the Lone Star State again.
Then we have an agreement? Shake on it?
Sure thing.
Bo reached across the desk to shake hands with Parker. Scratch did likewise.
Marshal Brubaker will give you the details. I'll just say good luck, gentlemen.
Why? You reckon we gonna need it?
Knowing Hank Gentry's reputation, I'm absolutely certain that you will.
After leaving the meeting with Parker, the three men paused just outside the courthouse.
I'll say again, this wasn't my idea. And not to mince words about it, I don't appreciate the judge saddling me with a couple of amateurs.
You'd rather go it alone, is that it?
I'll have enough to do just keeping up with those prisoners without having to look after a couple old pelicans like you two.
Old pelicans, are we? Well, let me tell you, sonny boy.
Don't make the marshal's case for him, Scratch. And as for you, Marshal, Scratch and I may not be young anymore, but trust me, we still got some bark on us. You won't have to look after us. You just worry about the prisoners.
Fine by me. You're on your own, then, if there's trouble. My only concern is getting these three varmints to Tyler.
That's a deal. When are we leaving?
First thing tomorrow morning. I want to be on the road by sunup.
That's fine. You plan to carry them in the same wagon you used to bring them here?
I figured I would. You got any objection to that?
Not at all. Look pretty sturdy. What about supplies?
There's a boot under the driver's seat we can fill up with provisions. If we run low, there are settlements between here and there where we can buy what we need.
Are we taking along a saddle horse?
What business is that of yours?
Just curious.
Yeah, I'm taking a horse. I'll tie it on behind the wagon. You two have good mounts.
We do. We won't have any trouble keeping up.
Well, good. You can meet me here at the courthouse at, let's call it 6 o'clock tomorrow morning. And be ready to ride.
We will be.
Brubaker gave them a curt nod and stalked off toward the stairs that led down to the basement jail. From the looks of it, he intended to pay a visit to the prisoners.
That little banny rooster don't like us.
He doesn't appear to like much of anybody. I wonder why not. Let's go see if Corgan kept that stew warm for us like he said he would.
The tavern keeper had kept his promise. He set steaming bowls of Irish stew in front of the Texans, along with fresh cups of coffee. Then he surprised them by pulling out a chair and sitting down at the table with them.
Why don't you join us?
I don't mind if I do, seeing as it is my place and all. What did 42 Brubaker want with you?
It wasn't Brubaker who wanted us. It was that darn judge.
You heard about the ruckus with the prisoners who tried to escape earlier, I suppose.
Aye. Some of my customers have been talking about it. Quite a brouhaha from the sound of it.
Yeah, we kept a couple of them from getting away, and that brought us to Judge Parker's attention. He wanted to hire us as temporary deputy marshals.
Oh, he's sending you into the territory after Badman, then.
We're going to Texas with Marshal Brubaker. He has to deliver the prisoners he brought in today to another federal judge down in Tyler.
I'm betting Parker don't care much for that. Once he gets a lawbreaker in that hell-on-the-border jail of his, most of them don't come out again unless it's to make the acquaintance of George Maladon.
Bo knew that was the name of the hangman who conducted the executions for Parker.
How well do you know Brubaker, Mike?
Tolerably well. We've been acquainted for 4 or 5 years, I'd say.
He sure got a burr up his backside, don't he?
Well, he's not a man who's easy to warm up to, I'll admit. You can't question his dedication to the law, though. It cost him his marriage.
How's that?
Well, it cost him his engagement, I should say. They never did make it to the altar. But he'd be married to a mighty pretty girl with a rich daddy by now if he'd agreed to give up packing a badge. She and her da wanted him to go to work for the old man in his lumber business. The way I heard the story, 42 agreed, but then he changed his mind. I reckon he just couldn't bear the thought of sleeping in a nice warm bed with a nice warm wife and collecting wages for a cushy job instead of spending his days blistering under a hot sun and freezing in a cold rain and getting shot at by some of the worst rapscallions west of the Mississippi. The man's daft, if you ask me, but don't ever question how he feels about doing his job.
That's good to know, since we'll be traveling with him for a while.
Well, there's dedication, and then there's sheer pig-headedness. And 42's capable of that, too. Have a care, lads, that he don't get both of you killed.
Bo and Scratch were sitting on their horses in front of the courthouse the next morning when Brubaker drove up in the wagon. The air was cold enough that the breath of men and horses alike turned into plumes of steam. The Texans' saddlebags were full. Despite what Brubaker had said about taking along plenty of supplies, the Texans had decided that it wouldn't hurt anything to bring extra provisions. Brubaker brought the wagon to a halt and looped the reins around the brake lever.
I wasn't sure you fellas would be here this morning. Thought you might have decided to back out.
Now once we shook on something, we don't back out.
And you're not going to get rid of us that easily, Marshal.
Brubaker climbed down from the wagon seat.
Wait here. I'll go get the prisoners. Jailers are supposed to have them ready to travel.
He went down the stairs to the basement. While Bo and Scratch waited for him to return, they rubbed their gloved hands together for warmth. A few minutes later, a whole mob of people came up the stairs, led by Brubaker, who had his revolver in his hand. Behind him came a couple of guards carrying shotguns as they backed up the steps so they could point the greeners down into the dark basement. Jim Elam, the skinny hombre with long black hair who Bo had scuffled with the day before, emerged next, wincing at the light. He shuffled along carefully because his hands were cuffed behind his back, and a chain ran from those manacles down to the shackles on his ankles. Those shackles had just enough play in them to allow him to move up the steps. Burly, bearded, glowering Dayton Lowe was next. He was chained up the same way. He resembled a bear, and Bo wouldn't have been surprised to hear him growl. That left Kara LaChance. She came up the stairs last, chained and shackled like the others, wearing a fresh dress and a shawl draped around her shoulders that left her head uncovered. Bo was struck once again by just how pretty she was. At first glance, she looked like she ought to be somebody's bride, setting out on a new course in life. Then when he looked closer, he could see the loco fires burning in her eyes, and he had no trouble remembering that she'd been ready to carve up Scratch the day before. She would carve up anybody who got in her way. Several more shotgun-toting guards followed the prisoners up from the basement and then spread out to surround them as they hobbled toward the back of the wagon, where Brubaker opened the door.
You first, Elam. Get in there and sit on that bench.
Ain't you gonna chain our hands in front of us? It's gonna be mighty uncomfortable riding with our arms pulled behind us this-a-way.
You should've thought about that before you went around robbing and killing folks all over creation. Now get in there and don't make me tell you again.
Elam awkwardly climbed into the wagon and moved along the bench that ran down its center. He sat down at the far end. Brubaker crouched inside the enclosed wagon bed, covering Elam as one of the other deputies climbed in and looped another chain around Elam's waist. This one led down to a sturdy iron ring bolted into the floor of the wagon bed, where it was fastened with a massive padlock. Lo was next, chained into place on the middle of the bench. He didn't say anything, but his expression made it clear that he would have been glad to tear all of the guards limb from limb with his bare hands. While Lo was being put into the wagon, Carol LaChance looked up at the Texans where they sat on their horses.
I should have cut you when I had the chance.
Yeah, well, it weren't for lack of trying on your part, miss.
Shut up! Prisoners don't talk!
Go to hell!
The officers got Kara inside the wagon and locked down. Brubaker checked the irons on all three prisoners, then climbed out of the wagon, slammed the door closed, and fastened it with another massive padlock.
Satisfied?
They're not getting loose this time. That's for certain sure. All three of them got stripped down to the skin and searched this morning. And they're chained up in there so good they couldn't get anything to help them get loose, even if they had it.
Hey, what about when the gal has to tend to her private needs?
She'll have to take care of that with one of us holding a gun on her. I don't like it any better than you gents do, so don't try pulling any of that Texas gallantry on me. I'm taking no chances. And if you don't like it, you're free to go on your own way since you ain't taking the judge's money yet.
Well, stick. This isn't a one-man job, Marshal.
I figured we'd be on the road by now. Wait here. I'll let the judge know we're ready to pull out.
A few minutes later, Parker came out of the courthouse, followed by Brubaker. The judge looked at the wagon and nodded, as if he could see through the sides and approved of how the prisoners were chained up.
Gentlemen, I believe I promised you $40 apiece. I'll pay you as soon as you've been sworn in.
Do we have to wear badges? Because we know much cotton wearing badges. Every time we've helped out the law, we've done it, you know, sort of unofficial-like.
No badges, but if you want the two double eagles I have for each of you, you'll have to be sworn in and sign a receipt.
Well, let's get on with it, Your Honor. I think Marshal Brubaker wants to get started.
The formalities were soon over with, and two double eagles apiece rested in the Texans' pockets.
You're now legally appointed representatives of the United States government, gentlemen. Conduct yourselves accordingly.
We'll bear that in mind, Your Honor.
And we'll try not to be an embarrassment to the government.
Brubaker climbed to the wagon seat and unwrapped the reins from the brake lever.
Are we ready now? Sun's coming up. We're burning daylight.
Ready whenever you are, Marshal.
They took the road south out of Fort Smith, which followed the boundary between Arkansas and Indian Territory fairly closely. Bo rode up alongside the wagon seat.
How long do you think it'll take to get to Tyler?
5 or 6 days, I expect, if we don't run into any trouble.
If that's true, then the dinero we're getting paid works out to be better than the wages we can make cowboying.
You'll earn every penny of it if Ginger and his bunch come after us.
The thick wooden walls around the wagon bed had a few small slit-like windows set high in them to let in some light and air. Obviously, those openings permitted the prisoners to hear some of the conversation that was going on outside, too.
You just wait, you damn law dog! Hank's coming after you, all right. When he catches up to you, you'll wish you'd never been born. He'll take his skin and knife to you, and you'll be screaming and begging for him to kill you before he's through with you.
The town had fallen well behind, leaving them to travel through rolling, thickly wooded hills broken up by grassy meadows, plowed fields that were bare of crops at this time of year, and the occasional rocky ridge. From time to time, they passed a log cabin with smoke curling from its chimney into the morning air.
If anybody's coming after us, they won't have any trouble following our trail.
I know.
The day warmed as the sun rose higher in the sky, but the air still held a slight chill, even at midday, as the wagon approached a low, rambling wooden building beside the road. A buggy and a farm wagon were parked in front of the building, and several saddle horses were tied up at the hitch racks. Thick billows of white smoke came from the stone chimney.
Clark's trading post. We'll stop here and let the horses rest for a spell. Take the prisoners out one at a time and let them go out back to the privy, too.
He brought the wagon to a stop at the side of the building. Bo and Scratch reined in and dismounted while Brubaker climbed down from the high seat. The Texans drew their Winchesters from saddle sheaths.
I reckon we'll cover them while you turn them loose?
I'm not turning them loose.
Bad choice of words. While you unlock the chains holding them to the floor.
Right.
Brubaker reached into his pocket and brought out the big key that would unfasten the padlocks.
The girl's coming out first.
Bo and Scratch worked the levers on their rifles. They stood back, one on each side of the door in the back of the wagon. Brubaker unlocked the padlock on the door and took it off. Then he stepped back quickly and dropped his hand to the butt of his gun, just in case the prisoners had gotten loose somehow and were about to try busting out.
Where are we?
Why have we stopped?
We're at Clark's. I'm gonna take you out one at a time, let you tend to your business, give you some food and something to drink. If you don't get me into trouble, it'll go a hell of a lot easier.
Easier for you, maybe.
Easier for you, too. Unless you enjoy going all day with nothing to eat and you like pissing in your pants.
Go to hell!
Oh, this is gonna get just mighty old.
He reached forward, grasped the handle on the door, and pulled it open. All three prisoners flinched away from the midday light that spilled through the door. It had to be painfully bright to their eyes after spending the morning inside the dim, shadowy wagon bed.
You first, Kara.
Why, ain't you the little gentleman? And I do mean little.
Brubaker stood on the steps leading up to the open door and reached in to unlock the padlock holding Kara's chain to the ring on the floor. Then he backed off and drew his gun.
You're not gonna take any of these other chains off me.
Not hardly.
I need my hands free. I can't take care of my business with my arms chained behind my back.
You'll just have to make do.
What? Damn you!
Shut up, or you can just stay in the wagon.
Kara climbed awkwardly out of the wagon with the chain that had fastened her to the floor now dangling awkwardly from her other chains, weighing her down. Between that and the shackles on her ankles, there was no way she could run. She could barely shuffle along.
Creel, you come with me. Morton, stay here and keep an eye on the other two. If either of them does anything suspicious, shoot him.
Oh, I reckon old Bigfoot Southwick wouldn't like it if he didn't get to hang all three of them.
I don't care what Judge Southwick likes or doesn't like. I'd rather bury a prisoner than have one escape. Come on, Creel.
Bo and the deputy followed Kara as she inched her way along the side of the building. An outhouse sat behind the trading post at the edge of some trees. That was their destination.
I tell you, I gotta have my hands loose. I gotta pull my dress up. My God, Brubaker, ain't you got no decency to you at all?
You're a fine one to talk about decency. I seem to remember Gentry and his gang burning down a farmhouse with the family that lived there still inside. You were there.
One time when we passed through those parts before, that damn Cherokee sodbuster sent word to the law. He tried to turn us in. We barely got away. Hank swore then that Redskin would pay. Him and his squaw and all their brats.
Go on, get in there if you're going to.
Kara shuffled into the two-holer.
Ain't you even gonna close the door and give a lady some privacy?
I would if there was a lady here.
Son of a... Brubaker, this ain't gonna work.
Creel, use the barrel of your rifle to lift her skirt some.
I'll give you the rifle and I'll cover her with my Colt.
All right, blast it.
Brubaker holstered his revolver and practically snatched the Winchester from Bo's hands. Bo moved back a step and drew his Colt. Brubaker reached into the outhouse and used the rifle barrel to hoist Kara's dress enough so that she could sit down on one of the holes. Bo wanted to avert his eyes, but he didn't.
All right, I'm done.
Stand up and come on out then.
You're a miserable excuse for a human being.
Leastways, I never killed any innocent folks like you and your butchering crew.
Hank and the boys will butcher you all right. Lay you wide open and show you your own innards. How's that gonna feel to you, lawman?
If I was you, I'd worry more about what it's gonna feel like when that trapdoor drops out from under you and that hang rope tightens around your neck.
Marshal?
Three men had just stepped out the back door of the trading post, and every instinct in Bo's body was suddenly warning him that they were trouble. Out in front of the trading post, Scratch stood alertly, holding his Winchester and watching the two men inside the wagon.
It just ain't fair, the way you fellas are treating us.
From what I heard of your checkered career, son, being fair ain't something you ever worried about much. It ain't fair to rob people of money and property they worked hard for.
Yeah, well, the government does it all the time, don't they?
Yeah, but that don't make it right.
If you ain't tough enough to hang on to what you got, you don't deserve to have it.
Well, now, There might be something to that, but this here is what you call a civilized society. We ain't barbarians.
A man's either a barbarian inside, or he's fodder for them that are.
Oh, I wish them other two would hurry up and get back with Tara. I need to visit that outhouse.
Well, they'll be here when they can.
Scratch stepped back and saw that a couple of roughly dressed men armed with six-shooters had come out of the trading post. They stood on the front porch talking. Scratch tensed. He didn't know Hank Gentry or any of the other members of Gentry's gang by sight. It was possible that these were two of the Owl Hoots, and they might be planning on trying to free Elam and Lo. Instead, one of them took a silver flask from under his jacket and unscrewed the cap. He lifted it to his lips and took a healthy swig of whatever was inside, then offered the flask to his companion.
Ooh-wee! That'll sure warm you up on a cold day. Try it, cuz.
Scratch could see a faint resemblance between the men now, so he could believe that they were cousins. Not that it was any of his business, he reminded himself, as long as they didn't bother him or the prisoners. The second man took a long drink from the flask and handed it back to the first man.
You're right. That's prime corn.
The two of them came down the steps, a little unsteady on their feet. The first man hesitated and looked over at him. He nudged his companion with an elbow, then came toward Scratch with a leering grin on his face.
You belong to a medicine show, old man?
What makes you say that?
Them fancy clothes you got on. Or is there a circus coming? I just ain't heard about it yet.
You boys better just move on.
What's in there that's your garden? You got a bear or something locked up in that wagon?
I'll bet it's one of them tigers.
Or maybe some whores. Fella dressed that fancy could be a whoremonger.
Go finish getting schnockered somewheres else. Leave a man to do his job, why don't you?
Help us, boys! Get us loose! Kill this old man and we'll make it worth your while!
Alarm bells had never stopped going off inside Scratch's head, so he wasn't surprised when the two strangers dropped the pretense of being drunk and swept back their coats to claw at the holstered revolvers on their hips.